why is it so important to make this switch from us thinking what is wrong with you to what happened to you?
Well, let me answer that, because I first came across this question, what happened to you, when I was doing an interview with Dr. Bruce Perry a couple of years ago for 60 Minutes story I was doing. Now, I've known Dr. Perry for over 30 years. I first started interviewing him in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s on the Oprah show, when we were talking about raising children and how important it is those first 0 to 6 years. So I've been hearing about what it means to nurture and support the brain early on. It wasn't until that conversation a couple of years ago. I don't know whether, I think it's because of where I was in my life at the time. I opened a school in South Africa. I've had these wonderful, brilliant girls who come from traumatic backgrounds grow up and have really serious mental health issues. And I was trying to, at the time, figure out, what are we doing wrong at our school? Something's really wrong here. And in that interview with Dr. Perry, he said, you know, most people ask the question when kids are not behaving the way you want them to behave of what's wrong with them. We really should be asking about what's happened to you. And something went, aha, 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 in my brain. It was like a major moment. Like, I got it in a way that I hadn't received it before. And I realized that it's not just for children that you ask that question, but it's really everybody. And that moment, Bruce, as I've said to you many times, Dr. Perry, changed the way I saw my relationships, how I saw my own life, how I interacted with people. And even in politics, where it was so crazy in the past 4 years, and everybody's always talking about what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong, I would always say, I wonder what happened to that person. I wonder what happened to them younger that caused them to be this way. So all of the labels that you just gave, Jay, there is a world of labels. There is, you know, overachiever. There is, you know, obsessive compulsive moms, soccer moms. There is the desire to, you know, please people all the time. There's a multiple labels that refer back to what happened to us. And so I will just say this. One of the things that Bruce says in the book, each of us comes into the world with our own worldview. And that worldview is actually shaped from the crib. And you get from the world what you project into the world, and you project into the world what you were raised with and what you were raised around. So that's why what happened to you is the essential question.
We all get into these scenarios in the world where we think we're trying our best to help and love other people. So I think majority of people feel like they give more than they get. And I think anyone who's an empath or feels like they care for others will feel, I give out so much love, but I don't get as much back. And that's how I felt sometimes in the ashram. Now, the interesting thing is that I had forgotten lesson number one in the ashram. And the first lesson in the ashram was, this is a hospital. There are doctors and patients. But remember, the doctors are also patients. And sometimes the patients may teach the doctors. But remember that we're all in the same space in this hospital where everyone is going through a process of purification. So that was very clear. The ashram was not meant to be heaven. It wasn't meant to be this idyllic place where everyone was perfectly zen and calm. It was a place where you had to learn to develop that even amongst the challenges that were there, just like in reality. So I'd forgotten that, and I was going, well, I'm giving out lots of love and no one's giving me any love. And it was really emotional for me because I just felt like I was investing in people and helping people and supporting people. And I'll never forget that conversation. And even till this day, it's become one of those conversations that stays with me and I remind myself of regularly, hence I put it in the book. The monk said to me, he said, just as there are people that you love and don't love you back, there are people in your life that are investing in you and loving you that you've forgotten about. And it was one of those like stop moments of just, is that true? And I would encourage everyone who's listening and watching right now to really think about that. Think about that person you've been chasing, whether it's a friend, a potential boyfriend or girlfriend, a potential husband or wife, or whatever it may be, your job. And then ask yourself, has someone ever chased you in life? Or has someone ever pursued you in life? Or has someone ever tried to love you in life and you didn't even give them a time of day? The answer is true. I could agree with it. I can completely agree with that. There are people in my life who've done more for me than I could even begin to try and do. And that isn't just parents and family members. I'm talking about people professionally that I just can't repay. And so he spoke about it as a theme called the circle of love, that you will always get the love you give out, you will always get it back. Or whatever you give out, you will always get it back. You just won't get it back from the same people you give it to. And that was really fascinating to me because I also realized that I may have caused hurt to people and they may not have hurt me back, but I've received hurt from people that I never hurt. And so it works both ways, both with hurt and love. And when you see it on both ends, and that's ultimately karma in a tiny nutshell, it's completely grounding in saying, yeah, let me take a real look at my life and where those blind spots are about who I'm not being grateful to, who I'm missing, who I'm not expressing thanks to.
The here and now, you know, that's an expression that's achieved in almost, you know, cult-like status in our lexicon. But as in any case, when phrases are used and overused in a culture, sometimes they tend to lose their influence and their impact. And people just sort of toss about the here and the now as a reference in time without actually considering, I think, the magnitude of what those words really represent. Today, right now, I want to share with you somebody who has helped me, along with millions of other people, to really understand just why that phrase, the here and particularly the now, is not only vital, but is really all that there is. My guest today should be called, I guess, the father of the now, because Eckhart Tolle is widely recognized as one of the most original and inspiring spiritual teachers of our time. I personally think that you are a prophet, Mr. Tolle. And I was first introduced to your teachings back in the year 2000. Actress Meg Ryan was on my show and she told me about this book. We're in a commercial break. I don't even know how the subject came up, but she mentioned the power of now and how it was really having a big impact on her life. And so I went right out and I got the book right away. And I put it in my magazine as one of on the old list. And I think I even listed as a favorite thing for Christmas for all of our viewers. The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment, would have to be one of the most transformative books in my life. It's always by my bedside, no matter where I am. I carry it with me. Well, I was so moved in the book when you said, in the very beginning of the book, you said, 29 years old, having pondered suicide, you were thinking this, quote, I cannot live with myself any longer. This was the thought that kept repeating itself in my mind. And then suddenly I became aware of what a peculiar thought that was. Am I one or two? If I cannot live with myself, there must be two of me, the I and the self that I cannot live with. Maybe, I thought, only one of them is real. I love this because it's really one of the first times I thought, yeah, that's right. When you say, I'm going to tell myself something, who is the I and who is the self? That's the fundamental question, is it not?
Yes, that's right. The most people are not aware that they have a little man or woman in their head that keeps talking and talking. So there's a voice in the head that's the internal dialogue that most people are completely identified with. And in my case, and in many people's case, the voice in the head is a predominantly unhappy one. So there's an enormous amount of unhappiness that is continuously generated by this unconscious internal dialogue. And at that moment, that night, a separation occurred inside me between the voice, which is the incessant stream of thinking, and the sense of self that had become identified with that voice in the head, and a deeper sense of self that I later recognized as essentially consciousness itself, rather than something that consciousness had become through thinking. So that night, the separation occurred. And when I woke up the next morning, I was completely at peace for the first time since my childhood, without understanding why. The understanding came much later. So the important point here is that it's essential for people to become aware that their thought processes and the sense of self that is derived from their thinking, which includes, of course, all one's memories, all one's conditioning, one's sense of self is a conceptual one that is derived from the past. So all the stream of thinking really is a form of conditioning of the past. It's essential for people to recognize that this voice is going on inside them incessantly. And it's always a breakthrough when people for the first time realize, here's my thinking, here are all the habitual thoughts that I've been having, repetitive thoughts, very often recurring negative thoughts, and they suddenly realize, and here I am, knowing that these thoughts are going through my head. So the identification is suddenly broken, and that is for many people the first real spiritual breakthrough. Spiritual, as I see it, is not believing in this or that, but it's stepping out of identification with a stream of thinking. So you suddenly find there's another dimension deeper than thinking inside you. I sometimes call that stillness. It's an aware presence, just that. It's nothing to do with past or future. And that we could call also, it's like waking up. That's why traditionally in many spiritual traditions they use the term awakening. So many people would tell you, well, what do you mean awakening? I'm awake already. But what is meant by awakening is that you wake up out of the stream of thinking. And when you wake up, you become present. A completely different dimension of consciousness is suddenly there.
Well, I recall in Stillness Speaks, you talk about the awareness. Stillness Speaks, the book Stillness Speaks is all about that awareness. Yes. And I love the line where you say, once you recognize, I'm paraphrasing, of course, that voice and that you are the observer of that voice, that very awareness is you.
That's right. And not the voice. So you recognize as essentially there's something inside you that has its place. It's the stream of thinking.
Right.
It's connected with the past.
Mm-hmm.
It contains all your memories. It contains all reactive patterns. It contains old emotions and so on. They're all part of that. But essentially, it is not essentially who you are. And that's an amazing realization. Now, the mind, of course, may then ask, well, then tell me who I am.
That's the big question. I'm talking to Eckhart Tolle, author of Power of Now. So what is the answer to that question?
Well, the answer to that question is who you are cannot be defined through thinking or through mental labels or mental definitions, because it is beyond that. It is the very sense of beingness or presence that is there when you become conscious of the present moment. It's intrinsically one with what we call the present moment. I sometimes say that some people might find this a little strange, but in essence, you and what we call the present moment at the deepest level are one. Because you are the consciousness out of which everything comes. Every thought comes out of that consciousness that you are. Every thought disappears back into that space of consciousness that you are. So essentially, you are a conscious, aware space. And all your sense perceptions, all your thinking, all your emotions happen, they come and go in that aware space.
Space, yeah. Yes. Well, did it feel like, Eckhart, when this happened to you, that moment of realization where you realized the voice was separate from the awareness, that moment that you speak about in the beginning of the book, did it literally blow your mind?
Yes, it did. But I didn't understand it. I just realized suddenly the next day I was at peace, and I remained at peace. There was a deep sense of inner peace, although externally nothing had changed. So I knew something very drastic had happened, but it took me some years to actually understand what had happened. some years after, 3 years after this transformation, I was talking to a Zen monk, mm-hmm. and he was telling me, he said, well, Zen basically is very simple. It's you don't rely on thinking anymore. It means to go beyond thinking. And I suddenly realized, oh, this is what has happened to me. That state that I felt was a state of inner peace was also a state of far less thinking than I had been doing before. All that unhappy thinking, all that repetitive thinking wasn't happening to me anymore. Thinking can also be a powerful and wonderful tool. It only becomes an affliction if we are totally identified with thinking and we derive our sense of who we are from the stream of thinking. In that case, you're telling yourself continuously what I call sometimes the story of me. Mm-hmm. And in many people's case, it's an unhappy story. So they are continuously dwelling on the past, and there's nothing wrong with the past, but if there's complete self-identification with memory, then all your sense of who you are, your sense of identity, is then derived from the stream of thinking, and that's a dysfunctional and unhappy state. So when you step out of identification with that and you realize for the first time, I'm actually the presence behind thinking, then you are able to use thinking when it's helpful and needed, and it can be a wonderful thing. But you're no longer, I'll put it in extreme terms, but it's true, you're no longer then possessed by the thinking mind. The thinking mind is then a servant or a helpful tool which you can use. It's useful for many situations in this world, but you can't find yourself in there. And also, it is, if you can never be beyond the thinking mind, it interferes with relationships. It creates continuous conflict in relationships if there is no sense of space in the relationship.
Say that again. If there's no sense of space.
No sense of space. That spacious, aware presence that you can bring to the relationship. For example, when you listen to someone, you listen to your partner or you listen to a friend or just an acquaintance. Can you be there as the aware space that is listening, or are you, while the other person is speaking, continuously thinking, preparing the next thing you're going to say? Are you judging and evaluating what you're hearing? Are you just interested in your own aims and purposes? Or can you be there as the space for the other person? And I would say that's the greatest gift you can give a person. It is especially important for parents and children, but also very important in intimate relationships. Can you be there as the space, the aware, conscious space for the other person? For example, while you listen to the other person, can you listen in that simple state of alertness in which you're not judging what you're listening to? You're then there as a presence rather than as a person. So there's the deeper level of awareness is there. And that's what I call the space.
I was going to say, you offer them that space in which you allow yourself to be connected to whatever it is they are offering.
That's right. There's no judgment in that space.
That's right.
You're not defining the other person. And that's an enormous gift that you can give to another person. You're not imposing mental labels, judgments, definitions on the other person.